are not saints coming into flesh. Everything that comes in must come in right in the condition that was in when it left. There is no great transmutation caused by death itself. There is, in the certain levels of growth, after the growth becomes well established in consciousness, there are experiences in the after-death condition which help to permanently contribute to the growth of the person. But for the general purpose of matters, the individual who was no good when he passed on is not going to be elegant when he comes back. He's going to come back just about what he was before. But he is going to come back again with the possibility of growth. If he was stunted in one life or became a hopeless alcoholic, in the experience of this in his consciousness may cause him to be more careful, more discriminating next time. But the coming in, he will come back according to what he was when he left. Now, if this is reasonable, and it seems to be the only answer that makes sense, then we have an understanding of how the appearance of the Mendelian theory has been possible. Let us assume that with reincarnation, we also have the concept of karma. Now, karma we think of largely as punishment, which is an entirely erroneous approach to it. Karma is consequence. It is the result of that which is done. It can be the result of that which is not done. But it is a consequence, not a punishment. Karma, therefore, as consequence, may have a great deal to do with the embodying of a life. It is going to bring an entity back. It's going to bring a self back into an environment suitable to itself in the state it was in when it was deceased. Therefore, it is going to come back with the same infirmities. It is going to come back with the same potentials and the same responsibilities. It will probably return in very nearly the same cultural, racial, religious environment it was in before. It is going to be of whatever organic quality it was before. It is going to come into an environment which is the next step for itself. It is not going to come back in a great and noble way if there was no greatness and nobility in it. Here we see one point in which perhaps there is some error in the doctrine of Buddhism. But it may also be that we need Confucian to mend that wound. But in any event, as Buddha pointed out, karma as punishment brings back the being into a condition similar to that which it caused for other people. The tyrant, therefore, becomes a victim of tyranny. The licentious person is born back into the same moral deficiencies. The egotist comes back as egotist. The physical accumulist who can think of nothing but money comes back that way. And it would be natural, it would seem, and quite reasonable to assume, that under these conditions, the entity will come back in a Mendelian body suitable to its own need. In other words, in a long line of heredity, we find a whole sequence of desperados and delinquents. An entity seeking embodiment would probably come into such a family where it would be exactly what it was before and will be mistaken for the fact that it inherited these limitations when in reality it was these limitations which brought the entity back into that family. Therefore, the individual returns in an environment suitable to itself and becomes unaware even of its previous existence until sometimes intuitively or mystical experiences these factors break through. It is almost certain that the psychic chemistry of the parents is going to determine, from a hereditary standpoint, the type of being that will be brought into embodiment. And having brought into this being into embodiment, the parent has to learn their lesson, which is part of the hereditary pattern, and has to help the new entity coming in to its lesson in their life, family, and environment. Therefore, it would seem that rather than to assume that the individual has no existence before birth, no existence after death, that this is an oversimplification. It is a simplification that is intriguing to individuals who are afraid to contemplate immortality, that do not wish to so live that they would want to endure beyond the present body. They want to make the most of what they have on the basic concept that to have everything they can now is better, and whatever lies ahead doesn't mean anything anyway. Any individual who believes that consciousness is eternal, even though the body is not, cannot live that type of a life without coming in serious conflict with conscience. And it is better to deny the whole thing than to give up the false pleasures of the hour. So we have a world, many of the citizens living here, almost hoping they're going to die. And those who are hoping it's the end. But a civilization that produces only those who hope to get out of it is a more or less of a failure in its own right. It isn't very good. So what we are trying to think out through, if this is this, is the answer, scientifically, religiously, and philosophically, that there is a separate entity in the body, that this entity enters into the body as into a house or into an establishment of some kind. It enters in and takes over the control of that house. And in the process of control, it gradually assails the hereditary pattern in the house. In other words, the body is a rate of vibration, or a mixture of vibrations. And the entity coming in must finally make this body suitable to its own purposes. Therefore, there is going to be a process going on constantly in which the individual seeks to escape from the tyranny of heredity. It seeks to take this body and make it a purpose vehicle for its own action. If it achieves this, it becomes an individual. If it does not achieve this control, it then drifts through life until life ends. But most of the great experiences of life have arisen in persons who have gradually created or released into expression their own inherent superphysical propensities. In other words, the being coming in gradually places its own stamp, which Bailey calls the signatura rerum, upon the flesh, gradually transmuting the body into the likeness of its own will and purpose. Now, if this will and purpose is unenlightened, as it is in many cases, the body is going to be abused. The body is going to be tyrannized. Dissipation is going to set in. And a despot is going to run this wonderful mechanism that we call our corporeal constitution. If, however, we are reasonably thoughtful and somewhere along the line become a little interested in health and in the protection of the body, gradually the body becomes what it was intended to be, an appropriate dwelling and a useful servant of the being that dwells within it. This problem is therefore the problem of adjustment, fitting the being to the body, giving it an integrity in the body which has been formed. To continue this problem is a little further. Having gained a body which has its problems, the entity then begins in childhood to mold this body into the likeness of itself. Now here is where parental help is very essential, but is often not available. It is the purpose of the parent to give every possible advantage to the being by the proper disciplining and controlling of the body in which it lives. Parents have got to recognize a responsibility to the invisible being in that body. And they have to also realize that that invisible being is not a baby. That invisible being is a creature gradually coming into embodiment that probably is just as old as the parent. Therefore, from the beginning of this idea on, there's a gradual development of a democracy of relationships in which children are no longer created simply to amuse their parents or prevent a broken home or as a tax exemption. They are there to have the opportunity to achieve the proper evolutionary growth which is natural and right to mankind. The child, therefore, is responsive to many things long before it is assumed to be able to be educated. One other thing is that when the education does come, if the education is centered completely upon body, and the being in that body is not too strong, that being is going to be in slavery to the world of bodies. It's going to be enslaved to business, enslaved to industry. It's going to be enslaved to a job. It will be just as much a slave as the South held slaves prior to the Civil War. And as the body becomes the slave of a delinquent environment, the being in the body is conditioned adversely. That was why Comenius, I think, was so insistent that the first parental responsibility was to assist the being in the body to become aware of its divinity, its proper destiny, and to establish in that body proper moralities and ethics until the being itself is old enough to take control. Therefore, all the way along, the child should be regarded as an unfolding life principle, and not simply a body generated here on earth. It is very often difficult to handle some of these cases. But on the other hand, where a child comes into a home that is so structured that the child's inner life is not going to get much attention, it is also true that that is a life in which the parents have not done too much. Now, they may have done the best they could. They may have done all that they know how to do. But somewhere along the line, the difficult problem for the child becomes also the difficult problem for the parent, and both must solve their difficulties. Now, solution is not a simple platitude. Solution is the constructive use of proper means to do everything that is possible to maintain the proper relationship between the entity and its body and between the bodied entity and its family. These things have to be worked out. But if there is some appreciation of the values involved, there will be less tendency to simply block the whole thing out. Forget it. Ignore it. We won't have so many young people on narcotics if they could realize that this is not just one little life, one little experience, and then after that comes nothing. The hope of oblivion is strong in most materialists and is one of their great weaknesses. While they are satisfied in this, you cannot do too much about it. But no materialist can claim legitimately to be truly thoughtful. He cannot be a philosopher. He cannot be an idealist. He cannot have any of the religious overtones which are necessary to survival in a materialistically oriented culture. The only hope we have today of maintaining a proper attitude towards the changing world around us is to strengthen our own integrities in every way possible, so that we see more and more of the eternal purpose behind what appear to be the absurdities of human conduct. We will find that all of the different things that seem to us impossible, if they are impossible, will be so demonstrated by a power greater than our own. Actually, if this universe was created, and some scientists do not believe it ever was created, if it has some kind of a spiritual power at the source of it, and this is denied by a great many people, if it has any moral code, any justice built into its own structure, this must triumph. And if it has none of these things anywhere in it, then it is impossible to explain an ordered sequential process. It is impossible to study the vast emergencies of heaven, the great patterns of cosmic time and progress, the immense variety of infinite life, the magnificent chemistry of existence. It's impossible to study all of these things with an open mind and not realize that somewhere in this pattern, as Lord Bacon says, there is a universal mind without which existence could not be, and that there is nothing that we can study, nothing that we can learn that can save us from our own emergency unless we admit that somewhere there is integrity. If there is universal integrity, then creatures are treated properly. If there is a divine good at the source of life, that good does not promote and sustain evil. What we call evil, then, is our own mistake coming home to roost. We do things wrongly and we suffer. This is not due to the evil of a powerful spirit of reversal. It is due to our own failure to understand life. But whatever it is, wherever there is a punishment, it is because of love and not because of hate, and it certainly is not originating in something that does not know the difference. So I think we begin in philosophy, certainly, and in enlightened religion, by assuming that this plan is purposed, that it is an exact plan, that it is exactly just, and that all injustice arises from a conflict between truth and human error, that our own mistakes create the troubles, and that we are reminded of this time and time again. And if we look around us, we are being reminded of it every day right now. We are beginning to realize that we cannot be as foolish as we have been and survive our own folly. This is coming home. We know it now. We are beginning to think in terms of it. We are breaking through because gradually we discover that inside of this body, which is giving trouble, there is something that is capable of thinking about these things. That the dweller in the body has also the power to gradually come forth and correct its own mistakes. And by so correcting them and by so understanding the process, setting up a proper and reasonable way of life. In the old beliefs of some nations, there was the opinion or the teaching that great sages of the past took flesh and dwell among us. This may or may not be. We are not trying to explain whether the Rishi of India or these great souls are here or not. But one thing is certain, according to all philosophies of importance, that the enlightened ones do exist. That enlightenment is in the keeping of the enlightened. And that the enlightened have only one dedication. No one can be truly enlightened except when he is truly and completely unselfish. The truly enlightened labor for the common good. The stupid labor for their own good. And as a result of laboring for their own good, they are wrong. And troubles come in. Unemployment comes in. Exploitation comes in. All kinds of troubles come where the individual tries to live on the level of his body. If he is trying to live only in a world of bodies, in which buildings and machines and beings are bodies only, and has nothing beyond these with which to contemplate existence, then this is a very dismal affair. And unfortunately for him, nature says he can never prove what he thinks. nature knows definitely that the person who does not believe in God must ultimately be saved from this unbelief by a God in himself. A deity within his own nature must redeem him from the atheism or agnosticism of his outer life. Now, this sounds like it might be a kind of a responsible situation, but young people today are beginning to realize this also. They are beginning to realize that this freedom, this emancipation, this disregard for any form of limitation, restriction, or discipline is not bringing them anything. It is bringing them nothing but misery and misfortune and frustration and futility. Unless they get back in line and start using their powers as they were intended to be used, unless a service of the world need again takes dominance over the satisfaction of personal ambitions, until that happens, the troubles will continue. But the troubles themselves bring about the Reformation. It is because we can't stand ourselves that we change ourselves. And in changing ourselves, we shift leadership from the body consciousness to the being in the body. The body is a kind of Caliban in the tempest. It is a structure that has a kind of intelligence of its own. It is an intelligence that is completely locked into the framework of a human physical structure. The universe of the cells in the body, that universe is the body itself. And in this body, each cell has a kind of mystical individuality, a kind of deep-seated integrity. Cells keep the rules unless we destroy their ability to do so. Cells work together, and the moment they do not work together, the body collapses. So that the cell structure within the individual is a microcosm of the greater world. This microcosm has its natural rules which must be obeyed. This body has privileges. It has rights. It is not a slave. It is a conscientious partner with the being that inhabits it. It is the body which, as a lesser entity, might worship the mind and consciousness as a god. And that one power in us which rules all body of us is a kind of deity. And every little cell in the pancreas and the kidneys and everything, if it has any understanding inwardly or outwardly, recognizes itself as a citizen in the great economy of a body. And that this economy of a body is the habitation of a divine power. Our universe is the habitation of a divine power. Our bodies are habitations of a spiritual entities, beings that have the right of leadership and can use this body for the common good. And that is the purpose for which the body desires to be used. If the individual is unselfish in his purposes, temperate in his habits, and dedicated in his purposes, the body will be very comfortable. But the moment the individual breaks the rules, dissipation, all these things, are actually a tyranny of an unenlightened mind over a body which it is trying to destroy. So I think we have to get this dichotomy rather well fixed in our mind. The being in the body. The being in the body inherits and takes on the body which is next for itself. This body is the point that it has achieved in the unfoldment of its potentials. In this body it will remain to grow and to live as long as possible. But to live and grow are two different things. To exist does not mean to actually live. It does not mean to benefit. We are in a body to benefit. We may say that the human body is a sort of caravansary, an oasis in a desert. It is a place where we come to learn lessons. The Rosicrucians in their old manifestations said, this world in which we live is the college of the Holy Spirit, the ABC book room of the souls growing in God. This world is a college and a schoolroom, but it is not a college ruled by an academic body of agnostics or those who are simply trying to protect bodies. If a university trains bodies to perpetuate themselves as comfortably as possible, at the expense of a life within them which is not even mentioned in the curriculum, then the educational system has failed. Because the purpose of education is to make possible a greater active relationship between the faculties and powers which the individual brings with him into life and the needs of that inner life to grow and protect and manifest itself. If we can begin to think of these things this way, we will find, I think, that it is possible to understand that we can inherit the body. We can inherit bodies from the long streams of bodies, but that the bodies themselves become houses for separate creatures that have the right to rebuild the house if it is inadequate, or the right to destroy it or tear it down by their own perversities. And wherever the body is abused, the being in the body is penalized because it has not more or less effectively guided its own course. It is not up to the being in the body to humor it, to pamper it, to make it master of all purposes. It is supposed that this house shall be adequate for the need of the person living in it, and that in this house he is going to find everything necessary for a useful career, a career of fulfillments. These fulfillments are part of an endless chain of fulfillments. And in the last analysis, what we call the self, or the being in the body, the consciousness in the body, this dweller has also a long life. This dweller in the body is not immortal. This being in the body is not something that goes on forever, suffering, gaining, losing, hoping, fearing, doubting. This body produces merely a bead in a necklace of embodiments. The being in the body, however, is the thing that grows, not the body. And this growth goes on until ignorance has been overcome, until all the vices we associate with humanity have been corrected, and the individual, having ceased in all ways to be servant of his own ignorance, then passes into a state which is beyond our present contemplation. But it is certain that in the end, all things come to enlightenment, and coming to enlightenment, come again back to the house of the eternal. But they have to go there by a pilgrimage. And this pilgrimage is life as we know it. And this pilgrimage, we have to help others who are on the same road. We have to share our ways with those in need. We have to rest a little and work a great deal. But we must keep on until we have that achievement, which means that we have finally found the truth about ourselves and about all other things. And in this truth, we come to an absolute recognition of divinity. And we realize that the power behind this is the infinite good, which we are all seeking, but which we misunderstand so often as we go along the way. But in time, we will all get there, and the bodies themselves will grow, and the bodies in turn will become vehicles for higher forms of life. The evolution goes on. Bodies evolve, and in the infinite course of things, bodies become beings because they always were. But the various cellular structures and organizations must pass like planets and suns and stars through great evolutionary processes. If we treat a body well, we are contributing to our own well-being and adding to the growth of the body. And the body itself is part of another great cycle of eternal life beings that must fulfill a destiny. For someday, the human being himself and the smallest cell in his body must meet somewhere, sometime, on a level of equality. because they are all parts of one eternal life, and all things different or the same or similar are bound together by an identity of principle, which we have gradually lost by the divisions of intellectualism. So we can agree with Mendel, bodies can be inherited, but the body only can inherit the body. That which is the life inherits what it has earned, and having entered the body, proceeds to redeem it. And as the alchemists used to say, the final transformation or transmutation is that the conscious or divine will transforms the base metals of its own nature into the pure substances of truth. When this is accomplished, then the great experiment of life is lived. But the body that we have transmuted also continues to grow and to become perhaps sometime in the infinitudes of space a solar system or a universe or a mass of uncharted stars. We do not know, but everything is alive and in partnership for the development and perfection of its own potentials. Well, I guess that's it, folks.